Hi, this is Michael Veazey of Amazing FBA. Our sister podcast, The 10K Collective, is the world's newest e-commerce podcast. It's geared to the exact needs of 6-, 7-, and 8-figure Amazon and e-commerce business leaders. It's actionable but focused on how to scale your business and grow really fast for sale or long-term profit, not short-term hacks. We have in-depth talks with real e-commerce sellers and experts in industries like sourcing, team building, and managing cash. To find us, just search your podcast app for 10K Collective. That's 10K for kilo, Collective. We are live on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Android, Stitcher, and Spotify to name but a few of the apps we're rolling out to. Or you can go to 10kcollective.com for show notes or to listen online.
I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Hey, hey, folks. Welcome to Amazing FBA. This is your host, Michael Veazey. This is the place to be for British-based Amazon sellers. In fact, the truth is that although I'm British and I understand the position of British sellers, we help people all over the globe. Quite a big percentage of our podcast listeners, in fact, the majority seem to be based in the States. So you're very welcome. And guess what? That's 95% of what we have to say is the same anyway. There's a few nuances, but not many. By the way, British sellers, I don't mean only selling into Amazon.co.uk. We very much deal with Amazon.com as well and the other European marketplaces. So just a slight clarification there. We are in the middle of a 10-part mini-series of episodes regarding the overall scaffolding, the overall process you go through to build an Amazon private label based business, which is not the same as the end result. What does it look like? But it's the process of how to get there in a way that is both realistic and also affordable and minimizes unnecessary risks without adding unnecessary, you know, going around the houses, right? Very interesting. I was speaking to a client earlier today about all of this, and there's so much out there that kind of trains people and teaches people to jump from A to Z in one go, which is really super hard. We are all about the process of learning things at a micro level with a bit of retail arbitrage or something, and learning from doing, right? And then you get that learn, do, review circle of life going, which we're so passionate about. We normally have it as the ending of the podcast, at least we traditionally have. So you can only do that if you do stuff, right? If you learn, research, and then do one big massive buying of thousands of dollars worth of products in one go, then you're risking a lot and you're not learning very much. So we prefer to go in stages, and the in-between arbitrage where you spend 50, 100 bucks on something, and the big picture of, you know, big full private label launch or a custom product launch is that sort of test order in the middle, which is awkward and fiddly and difficult to get, but can be done. And we kind of specialize in finding ways of doing that. And generally we find ways to test a product launch in some form between about $1,000 and $1,500 for that rather than several thousand. So that's more or less the approach. And that's just a recap on the steps. Today is step six. We're talking about sourcing and getting in conversation with suppliers and getting the physical products made for you. Just to quickly recap, step one, be careful who you model things on. Just because somebody in 2014 managed to make $100,000 in a month with one product doesn't mean that you'll do the same in 2019 or that that's a good business model. I think you need to synthesize multiple businesses and what works and what doesn't work across the board into a business model. That's my philosophy anyway. You're welcome to listen to that and decide for yourself if that's for you or not. But that's what we have to offer. So I've never made millions on Amazon, but I have done selling myself, of course, quite substantial turnover over the years, but also I've synthesized things from podcast guests, from being a member of very exclusive private masterminds in London, England, and lots of British and some American, some European sellers, and then of course the masterminds that I run myself. So between those things, that's what we are basing things on. The second step that we talked about already is from the guide. By the way, I should tell you where to get the guide. I'll tell you in a second. The second step is arbitrage and learning from doing that, not as a business model, because I'm not a fan of that. It's not very scalable. It's certainly hard to scale. It's not very defensible. It's getting harder to do. you can't create a sellable asset in most cases, etc. Right? So it's not retail arbitrage is a business model. It's a quick way to learn a lot of skills. And most people don't have the humility or the, or I don't know, they're not taught to do it. But if you actually just do, if you want to make, you know, $1 million a year in 3 years time or something, and a couple of our mastermind members have gone from scratch to $1 million a year revenue. So it's entirely possible, but why not just sell a £10 widget first or a $10 widget, right? There's nothing stopping you doing that. And you'll learn a lot more doing that, and it's very low risk. So step three is the NSL process, the niche source launch. That's the basic process that everybody teaches, so nothing different here. But the step four is about scaling up through different levels of risk and different levels of skill, which we've already talked about briefly. And step five, the one before this, is niche. How do you find a winnable market on Amazon? So product research, as it's also known, or market research. So if you want to get the build guide, it's broken down, is developed by in conjunction with our designer, Joanna, a wonderful outsourcer that we use in Poland, of all places. Some really smart people over in Eastern Europe, which is an amazing place to source for certain things. Anyway, our guide is beautifully professionally designed, and I wrote it and then rewrote it with my coach. So we put a lot of time and energy into making it absorbable but powerful for you. Just go to amazingfba.com/build. That's amazing, F for Freddy, B for Bertie, A for alpha.com/build, B-U-I-L-D. So that's where you're going to get the PDF from. So to cover this topic then, the sixth step, sourcing for profit and quality. Those are the two main things you're looking for. And of course, those two things can be in a lot of tension with each other, right? So if your product isn't good enough quality, then you're either not going to sell it well if it looks horrible in photos, or in some ways worse, you'll manage to make sales, but then you'll get terrible reviews from people because they'll be disappointed in the product quality in some form. And quality is an interesting one we'll discuss, right? What does quality mean? The other thing, of course, is that you've got to make a profit. And of course, people will generally pay more money for something they perceive as quality. But as I was discussing with somebody who phoned in today, which I don't normally answer the phone just like that, but you can sometimes call me. There's a number on the website. And if you get hold of me, if I'm free, I'll answer it. Sometimes one of my team will start to answer it these days. We were discussing exactly that problem, because the other thing is, if you've got a great quality product, you normally have to pay more money for it. That's fine. But then the question is, can you get that price in the marketplace and still sell at a reasonable selling volume and sell at a profit, right? So this is always the tension that you can never fully, you know, magic that problem away, but you can work with it in an intelligent way. So the first critical prelude to sourcing is define what you're looking for first. Okay. I was speaking with Ash Monger recently of IMEX Sourcing, who's Ash's originally, Ashish, to give him his full name, is from India originally, but studied business in the UK for a few years before then heading off to China, where he'd never been before, because he knew that that's where he'd done some Amazon selling and that's where the sourcing was happening and that was where the game was being played. So he headed off and from scratch to set up a sourcing agency, which he's been running for, I believe, 9 years now. So an amazingly entrepreneurial guy, very meticulous about product quality. I mean, quality written all over everything he does. And he said to me, interviewed him recently on the 10K Collective podcast, which you can check out by, if you're in a podcast app, just put in 10K and Collective, C-O-L-L-E-C-T-I-V-E, or you can go to the blog for that, 10kcollective.com. And the reason I mention this, because Ash said, I said to Ash, what's the number one mistake that people make when they're sourcing? And he said, it's just because they don't really know, define exactly what they're looking for. Basically, what people often will do, and kind of work back in the day, is they'll go to Amazon, do some product research there, and then they'll take the keywords from Amazon, pop them in Alibaba.com, and then start conversations with suppliers about how much things cost and what the minimum order quantity is, the famous MOQ, right? How many units you can buy, the lowest number of units you can buy, really, before the supplier says, no, not going to work with you. The trouble with this approach is, well, multiple things. And I think it's all starts by being too general, because if you're general, not particular, or not, you're not going to get differentiation. You're not going to be different. Your product rather won't be different from your competition. And that means that the only way people can compare you is either it looks worse, or in which case you're not going to get many sales, or it looks about the same as everyone else, but it's a bit cheaper, which destroys the profit margin. We were talking about that a second ago, right? And if it doesn't delight your customers, or at least really solve their problems better than any other product out there, or at least as well as and slightly better value in some other way, then there's no particular reason why people are going to give you great reviews, especially on Amazon, where they're spoiled for choice with lots of different products, many of which look very similar because they are basically knockoffs of each other, either from exactly the same factory in China or from the same city. Just bear in mind the way China is structured. It's a one-party state. It's a sort of state-dominated capitalism rather than the traditional way it's grown in the West. You have so it's command economy to some degree. So that means that centralized decision making gets implemented. So there are entire cities devoted to just one product type. There's a place called Toilet City, which I've never been to, but I hear that they make great toilets and also wash basins and a few things like that. And there are, I believe, a couple of million people in Toilet City. And that's basically what the city lives on. And that's what all the factories do. So bearing that in mind, it's not surprising that you end up with extreme amounts of conformity and similarity between different products that you can get if you're not careful and if you're not mindful. So the solution to this is, before you even go near the sourcing process, you need to actually revisit, which comes back to what we're talking about. You need to revisit the niche research. It comes back to what we were talking about in the previous step, which means that you need to clarify exactly who you're trying to serve and exactly what problem they have or passion they have. The person and the pain, as I call it, the PAP, or the person and the problem, and can be a person and a passion. If somebody loves golf, then maybe you're designing golf clubs for them. But normally you're solving a problem, even if that's some passion that people have. People love golf, great, but they've got to carry their golf bag around all day and it's giving them a bad back. What's the solution? Maybe it's a golf bag with some wheels on, or whatever it may be. It's not a very good product for me to touch on this analogy because I don't play golf, which is another thing, which is you really, really should be targeting users. At least you know some people who are passionate or very, you know, intensive, if you like, professional users or professional shoppers, as Jim Cockrum calls it, of a product. So if you don't know them and if you're not in that market yourself, it's going to be much harder for you to develop a good product. And then, of course, the numbers need to stack up. So we talked about that with the fifth step, the product research. But this is when it becomes really critical, because you can't really develop a wonderful product unless you work in collaboration with your target market. And the easiest way is to be a member of your target market, but you should also talk to other people. And you need to just basically do some very simple things, like just, you know, ask them what their problems are, and then go and look at the alternatives that they could buy and buy some of them, use them yourself, give them to people to use and get some feedback without revealing too much. I've got a couple of mentoring clients who are doing a great job of creating a sort of custom products in response to what they perceive as a gap between, you know, demand and supply. One of them in the health space, for example, that has got people who got a particular physical kind of problem and they need a physical kind of solution. And he's looked at all the alternatives and they look both overpriced, which is great from the profit margin point of view, and also not highly effective. And he's been in conversation with individual people and asking their opinions about this. And the next thing he's going to do is send them some of the samples of his own products and get some feedback from them as part of his sort of iteration or development of the product. So by the time you've done that, you are really getting quite particular about the product. So now there's a middle ground between, on the one hand, the extreme of very general, just getting a keyword. So it's keyword driven, basically, and using Alibaba.com as a keyword driven marketplace, just like Amazon is. The trouble there is that a lot of Alibaba.com, you're going to have a lot of the same people looking. So you end up with a very similar looking set of products on Amazon. Or so you can have both problems here. You will end up with overpriced products because it's kind of a bit closer to retail prices there, because they're selling to people who don't know much about what they're doing, because that's not how you would, not a professional user of a factory isn't really going to go straight to Alibaba and just grab stuff off the shelf normally, right? That's kind of amateur behavior. So you get kind of amateur pricing, right? So the opposite extreme is, you know exactly how the design is made. You start a design from scratch with a CAD design or computer aided design, and you actually start everything from scratch. Now, that isn't as scary as it sounds. I've got a client working with a CAD designer, and I believe for a couple of £1,000, he's going to get some very detailed CAD designs. And even this is on a different product, and he's a fairly new to the Amazon market thing. So you don't have to be an expert to start doing sourcing professionally designed from scratch products. But and by the way, Ryan Shaffit of XQ Manufacturing is probably the expert I would go to for that. He's a very useful contact. But you don't even have to go to that extreme. You can, however, in middle ground, at least be very, very specific before you even go shopping. Clarify within your own mind, and preferably with a coach or a mastermind, get some feedback, and definitely from your target market, clarify what the product needs to do, the other products don't. What it needs to do that everything else does as well. So it's got to, like, the sort of meat and potatoes. If you've got a phone case, it's got to fit on an iPhone that it's designed for. Right? I've just ordered one, which is due to be delivered this afternoon. It needs to be a protective case. So I want something that protects it if you drop it on the corners. It also needs to protect the screen. What does it not do? It shouldn't cost more than X amount. So I ordered one £15. There was something else for £40, about $60, which I thought was overpriced for what I needed. It needs to do things that other things don't do. So this one looked like it was a really amazing screen protection level, but you could still type through the screen and it would still do facial recognition and all that stuff, for example, right? So, by the way, a great way to see how you need to deal with your own consumers of your product is to observe your own behavior as a shopper and see what things you want and how you decide things. Your job as the entrepreneur that's going to serve somebody is to observe that behavior, reverse engineer by talking to them whatever what they need, and then go and get that product made or find that product. But you need to be very granular about it. So you need to be very specific about what the product needs to do. You don't necessarily, though, have to be an expert in the actual physical design and the materials in whatever else, because even plastic comes in, you know, hundreds of different varieties of types of plastic. Never mind the different techniques for manufacturing, injection molding and what have you. The different things like that. That is when you need somebody with a design head involved if you're going to go custom manufacturing. But even if you're not, you need to be very, very clear about what the product needs to do and what it doesn't need to do. Sometimes you can remove features from a product. For example, if you've got an iPhone case and it doesn't need to be protective against drops from on the front or something, I don't know, it's maybe not a good example. If you want an iPhone case that looks elegant and shows off the color of the iPhone case, it can probably be clear. It doesn't need to be that thick. It probably doesn't need to be that strong. Whereas, so if you're competing against other people, it's not a very great example, but it's clear in my mind as a consumer. If you're competing against other people that have big, heavy, bulky cases, then if you create a lighter case, not only is that actually a bonus for the buyers, for the shoppers, but also it's going to save you some money in manufacturing because the materials cost is lower, and in shipping because freight is based mostly on weight and sometimes bulk. And also you're probably going to have lower storage fees at Amazon. So it's win-win-win, right? So it's often best when you really understand what the consumer wants to strip out some features that other things have, to add some other things in. And then what you can do is achieve that wonderful balance between quality for the consumer and profit for you that comes from being able to buy something at an affordable price. So this is an art, not a science, as well as a science. Some of the things you can do then, if you do want to go on Alibaba.com, is just to kind of bring it back to a more simple version, is that at some point you're going to have to think about the product specification. And you probably should do that before you go on Alibaba. But then in the end, you are going to start off by putting in keywords, but you shouldn't just finish with that before you have your negotiation, is what I'm trying to say. So you can filter by things like gold supplier, assessed supplier. You can filter by responsiveness. Does your supplier answer your email? Do they answer your questions? If they don't, they're going to be a pain to work with. You can filter by sample. This is another thing that even before you get into the specifics of a very precise product, you should get a sort of off-the-shelf sample from them and assess it really and just see if the product's any good, because it'll cost you $50, $60, $70, $80, something like that, to get it sent over. By the way, most Chinese suppliers, if you're dealing with China, will want products paid for in dollars. So if you're based in the UK and the pound is dropping like a stone, then that's bad news. So you want to get yourself into the dollar economy as early as you can. If you're buying in the UK, if you're selling in the UK and you're buying topicals, you're probably sourced in the UK. So topicals are things that go on your body like face cream, or consumables like vitamin supplements. If you're selling in the US, you'll probably source those in the US and so forth, right? So the same basic thing applies. You should try things out before you mass order them. And it's such a simple point, but a lot of people do a lot of research because they're too cheapskate to spend $80 on a sample or whatever. If you're ordering a sample in the UK or US, it's probably going to cost you a few bucks, right? A few pounds. So really important, you can eliminate a lot of suppliers very quickly and easily by getting a sample. If the quality is bad, don't buy it at any price, because rude reviews will ruin your life on Amazon, okay? Once you've done that, then you need to then look at your sample. You need to have conversations and maybe go back and forth or do a few different products. Even if you're not doing custom manufacturing, you're purely doing private label, i.e. you will be eventually putting your logo on somebody else's product design. You still want to make sure you look at all the different designs they have and pick one that answers the needs of your target market but doesn't do unnecessary things. and does do things that the competition doesn't do, right? So let me reiterate that, because it's really critical. Differentiation consists of really three things: doing what everyone does, right? An iPhone case needs to contain an iPhone. If it doesn't do that, it doesn't work, right? But everyone's doing that. So in order to differentiate from your competition, you need to decide what things you're not going to bother doing that the competition does. So you're going to offer different virtues and different sort of payoffs from that as well. And again, the third thing, most important, what does your product do that nobody else does, or better, does better than everyone else, right? And in my case, for example, I've got an iPhone case. I bought like 10 of them over the course of having different iPhones. And this one is the latest iteration. And the reason I'm buying this is because I really, really want it to be robust. So if it's a bit heavy and a bit ugly, then I don't really care about that. So I'm prepared to sacrifice beauty and I'm prepared to sacrifice weight. But what I want it to do better than everyone else out there is, for the price of £15 as opposed to the next price bracket up, which was £40, I want it to be the best in that sort of price class at protecting my phone, right? So that's a very, very specific need for a particular user, very particular type of phone model as well. And those guys got my business. And by the way, those guys, never heard of them before in my life for the brand. And they got 5 reviews in the UK Amazon, but it is 5-star average, right? And even though I know all about review manipulation, I still, as a consumer, instinctively like that clean 5 straight stars, average, no question mark, no is this rubbish. So far, on the very slim evidence of 5 reviews, I'm prepared to go, yeah, £15, I'll take that bet and buy it, right? So it's very specific why I'm buying, and you really need to be as specific yourself. So once you've done all that, you basically found responsive suppliers, you've filtered out people who don't answer emails or don't answer questions, you've filtered out via quality samples, you decided on the exact model they have or co-developed with them a potential model, that's when you start running the numbers. You need to go over your supply chain, your entire supply chain, meaning manufacturing, freight, import duties, any inspection that you need to get done in China, any inspection you need to get done in the US if you're importing from China, right? And then know those numbers and keep refining those numbers over the course of conversations and iterations of the product design until you know that you can see the way ahead, that at scale, meaning when you've ordered a decent number of them, you will be profitable, or at least it should be. One little caveat here, one big caveat, I should say, is that sneaky top line number, which is i.e. the income side, what you can sell something for. There is no point in setting your economics of your product up, unit economics, if you will, such that it only works if you can price higher than everybody else in the marketplace. Yes, that's possible, but it's a hard thing to achieve. And it really is going to be something you can't achieve when you first start out and you haven't got any reviews or very few reviews. And it's a risky proposition. If you flip that on its head, I mean, it may sound like a bit of a pessimistic thing to say, don't price more than competition. But if you flip it on its head, if you can make your product profitable, at say everyone else is selling a product for £20, like robust iPhone cases, or £25, and you can sell yours for £15 and still make a profit, then guess what? You are in a fantastic position, because if you can sell it for £20, you make a lot more profit. But even if you can sell it for only whatever, £12, you're probably breaking even. So you're reducing the risk of losing money and you're maximizing the upside potential. So always be very conservative when you are pricing up your profit and loss on the product side. Be very conservative with the price that you expect it to sell it for, and be very aggressive at pushing down the buying price, with the huge caveat that you still want the quality. And that's a very difficult game in China, because you generally get reduced quality if you reduce the price, right? So the way out of that, squaring that circle, is to be very clear about what things you do for your consumer. And if you add features, it's normally going to cost you money, or add quality, like better quality plastic, stronger, thicker metal, whatever it is, right? But if you get rid of certain features, that will save you money. And if you target your right consumer and you know exactly what they want and what they don't care about, that's how you square that circle. And by the way, this is called profitable variation. It's a very big picture business strategy from the incredible Richard Koch. That's K-O-C-H. Richard Koch, British entrepreneur, and proud to say, worth somewhere north of several hundred million pounds or dollars, whichever way you look at it. He's a fractional billionaire and a super smart guy. He's written a load of books. books. And guess what? He wrote those books after he got incredibly rich. So that's very unusual. And this is one of his key concepts called profitable variation. So check out Richard Koch. His greatest book is The Star Principle, I think, which includes the concept of profitable variation. But it sort of permeates several of his other books. Another book by him called Simplify. Just a genius business thinker who's actually made a lot of money by following his ideas and then made a little bit of extra cash from publishing books, not the other way around. So this is a very powerful, simple idea. And the simple example I'm giving you, I can't actually show it because I haven't delivered it yet, is if you're watching the video, if you're watching on, if you're listening, then you'll never be able to see it, my friends. You can always check out the YouTube channel. Just go to Amazing FBA and just put that into YouTube. We have pretty much most of the podcasts are up there on the YouTube channel as well. So guess what? This product, they've done exactly the right thing. They've got an ugly, heavy product, but which is the most protecting thing on Amazon. And within its price category of, say, the £10 to £20 range, it's the most protecting iPhone out there. At least, you know, iPhone case, I should say. At least, I hope it is. And if they've lied about it, they're stupid, because I'm going to give them their first one-star review. So in the end, you can't get away from the fact that your product promises, your marketing promises, should I say, have to align with your product's delivery on those promises. So it's a sweaty, difficult game. Sweaty is a rude way of putting it, but it's a difficult, difficult game to play. But that's where you have to work, because I think a lot of people focus too much on the marketing and hope that they're going to market their way out of problem. It's what Jim Cockrum of Proven Amazon Products and all that stuff, or Proven Amazon Course, he calls lipstick on a pig marketing. And guess what? That's a dumb idea, because you're only going to get incredibly ugly reviews and your product's conversion rate will tank and all the economics break down at that point. So in conclusion, a couple of other things that you need to add in. One is quality control. You must define exactly what you expect from the product. Again, this comes down to clarity, and it will, you know, develop along with your supplier and or somebody, if there's somebody organizing the process for you, a trusted friend over in China, but who is not actually running a factory, such as Ash Monger of IMEX Sourcing or Ryan Shaffett of XQ Manufacturing. Ryan's probably the expert in on custom-made products. Ash is just obsessed with quality control, just superb the way he's organized that. So those are two great guys with slightly different slants. I would contact them both if I were in your position and you're about to source products. So you've got to define exactly what you want and as part of the purchase order, and then you're going to give it to an inspector at the end of that manufacturing process so they can do a pre-shipment inspection. And, you know, there's a lot of detail you can go into here, but broadly speaking, give your manufacturer a heads up of what you expect exactly at the beginning of, or before you even place an order, at the point of placing an order, I should say, I guess, and then tell them that you're going to get somebody to inspect, and then make sure the inspector is consistent with the way they inspect is the stuff you asked for up front. If you ask for a lot of quality up front, the manufacturer is generally going to ask for more money. That's okay, but just know that. You can try and negotiate back down, but you need to be cautious about not dropping the price like crazy, because they will ruin the quality somewhere. And then you need to, the fact that you're asking an inspector to go in and they know that means that you're likely to get better quality even without the inspection. It's the knowledge that they have the inspection coming that will make it better. And the main thing is with placing your order that you are very, very detailed in exactly what you expect, exactly how the payment's going to work. And the other little thing to say, if you're a first time out, you may not know this. If you've been around, you'll know this is standard, the normal stuff for a private label size order is a 30-70 split. So you put 30% of the money down as a deposit, and that's normally what the suppliers use to buy their raw materials and things, depending how big they are and how hand-to-mouth their economics are. And then you will pay them 70% on condition that it passes. So the 70% balance, the remaining money, on condition that the product passes the quality control inspection in China. Now, there's no point in being pretentious about this. For a £500 order or $700-$800 order, they probably won't agree to that, and that's fair enough, right? Why should they bother? But if it's a substantial size order, so say over, I don't know, $1,500 roughly, you know, you can ask for a smaller order, but don't be surprised if they say no, then it's important to have a split of between the deposit and the balance being conditional upon the inspection being passed, because that gives you big leverage, I suppose you'd call it, over the suppliers. It gives you something they want and they don't get until they delivered what you want, which is the correct number of products at the correct quality as specified. So there's a whole bunch of work that goes into that. It's not a quick and easy process. But one thing I would say is this, that this is a more recent innovation that I don't include in the build guide yet, but we'll revise it at some point. It's been very interesting to me to see how a couple of the guys I've got who are starting out from scratch have worked with Ryan Chaffett, who I've mentioned of XQ Manufacturing, and Ash is another person that I'll be sending them to co-create the design and really have somebody who gets you and the Western mentality and the marketer's mentality, who's not somebody like you and me, who's not an expert in manufacturing. And I'm absolutely not an expert in manufacturing, and I've never claimed to be, but it's fantastic to have a sort of middleman or middle person who can help you with that process and be a trusted pair of eyes and ears to guide that process in China, where if you go direct to a factory or work with a Chinese agent, generally speaking, it's going to be very hard to know what you're going to get. And it's a very much more difficult communication process and much more time consuming. So if you ask me now, and this is always developing over every few months, I get real new insights into new ways of doing things. My current advice would really be very strongly go and talk to those guys about your potential product, because if they can help you speed up the process and give you and take hours and hours of back and forth on email off your plate, that is really worth paying them their percentage for. And yes, of course, you're going to have to pay them a bit more than you'd pay a supplier directly. And the economics of a product may or may not allow for that. But really, if you have to spend, 500 hours of your time and 3 months going back and forth with Chinese suppliers and Alibaba.com and end up not even selling that product because you can't make the economics work or the quality is horrible, versus paying somebody an extra 5% or 10% of the products, and if you can make the economics work selling that product to happy customers, for me, it's a no-brainer. I think it's at the very least worth exploring. The other thing I'd say is this: if your profit margins are so thin that you can't use a sourcing agent who's going to, add 10% to your sourcing costs, you probably shouldn't be selling that product anyway. Let me give you an example of product pricing. I mean, if you're selling something for $20, you probably should be trying to land it in the US for about $5, right? But if you go to IMEX Sourcing or somebody like that, and they'll charge you about 10% of the product value, the manufacturing cost, to source it for you. So let's say that they can arrange to get this product made for about $3 plus whatever else, and then they add another 30 or 40 cents per unit on for their commission. If you can't make the economics work at $5.40 as opposed to $5, then your profit margins are insanely narrow and almost certainly going to disappear anyway once you have some real life problems taken into account, like rejects, refunds, anything else that happens. Maybe your advertising costs you a little bit more than you're hoping. So I would say in conclusion that using somebody else to do stuff for you who's an expert in a very technical area is normally, at the very least, nearly always worth exploring and normally worth doing, I would say. You've got to look at the economics and you've got to take responsibility as a business owner for the overall direction of your business, the marketing overall direction, who you're going to work with, what consumers you're going to work with, and all of that stuff. And you have to take responsibility for your product being safe and doing a good job and so forth in the end. But there's no reason, just because you're taking overall responsibility for the direction of your business and for the quality of your products, for the decisions you make and for the everything else, that you shouldn't get help. The other thing to say is it's a really great time just before you spend a lot of money if you're going to go do a big private label order from China, or even spend $1,000 or $2,000. It's a very good time to get some input from a coach who can give you a reality check. When it comes to the basics of sourcing, I can definitely do that for you. I'm not a technical marketer. I'm not a technical manufacturing person, rather. I'm more marketing focused like a lot of entrepreneurs. But what I can do is give you some reality checks on the overall process, on your processes generally, your choices in particular, and the economics of your products. And by the way, if you don't have a clear process and you don't have clear ways of measuring the economics, which is true for a lot of people, then you really, really should get some input. There's plenty of free input available on the podcast, as this is part of it. But in the end, it could be very useful to hire somebody. If you want to do that, I have a lot of one-off, I'm just going to check the URL for this, but we have a lot of one-off services that I can offer you to do a sort of 1 hour or 1.5 hour Zoom call where we can go through in detail and really double check before you spend thousands of dollars whether you should be doing that. So just to quickly let you know, if you want to check that out, you can go to amazingfba.com/1off. That's one, number one, and then O, F for Freddie, F for Freddie. And you can see we've got three types of checks that we offer: an RAC market research sanity check, and then this one, what we call the GEM sourcing sanity check, where we'll basically go over what it's called GEM because it stands for GEM. It's the general review. We'll check your market research, make sure we check the process you've gone through. E for examine, we'll look at the details, and then M for make a recommendation. It's your business, your decision, but after we've reviewed the evidence of you, I can give you a clear and go or no-go recommendation, which I think a lot of people find very helpful. Quite a few people have taken us up on this. Generally, the cost is about $168 for an hour and a half. So that's whatever that is in pounds. It's about £138, £139. So not nothing, but I think a lot cheaper than ordering several thousand dollars worth of product only to discover that it's a nightmare and it soaks up months of your life that you won't get back as well. So up to you if you feel that's worthwhile. If you know me by now, if you've been listening to the podcast and reading the blog and you're on the verge of working with me to get some input, that's a very one-off, so low risk, very high impact, I think, way of getting input from somebody. In the end, whether you get input from me or somebody else, I really think before you order product is the great time, the best time, the most important time to get input from somebody who's been there before, because this is the point where you can make some really bad choices that have very big consequences to your finances, to your use of time over the next few months, and to your general happiness level. Because there's nothing worse than having a dreadful product out there, losing your money and getting rude reviews. And that was pretty much my story with one of my two variations of my first ever product, basically because the training I received didn't really deal with sourcing from China at all, which was just shocking to me. And I'm not going to name names, but I will never, ever recommend them, even though I have affiliate deals and they charge a lot of money, so I could potentially make a lot of money with the podcast recommending them. They let me down. I never want to put anyone else in that position. So I work very hard to try and be honest with my clients and with everybody who listens to the podcast. You know, positive, but honest. I think that's what I try and be. So there you go. I promise I will give you a real reality check. There are other very good people out there as well, so you could work with one of them. But I just don't think it's worth going on your own with this stuff, because you're just going to be very painfully recreating the wheel. This has been done millions and hundreds of millions of times over before. This is a tried and trusted sorts of processes. There is simply no upside to reinventing the way of sourcing from China, unless, of course, you live out there and are an expert, in which case, please do change it. There's a lot that needs improving. But if that's not you, even if you're sourcing from the UK, I mean, there's still quite a few things that you should go in with your eyes open about. So I've also sourced from the UK, not a huge amount, but definitely sourced some renewables from the UK in the business. So that gave us quite a few insights. So I should be able to help you with that as well. The other thing is, if I can't help you, I'll tell you. So if you book something in and, you know, I maybe email you if it sounds doubtful about whether I can help you, but we'll have you fill out a bit of paperwork before you worked with us. So if based on the paperwork, I can't help you, I'll simply give you a refund and say, look, I can't help you, and maybe recommend somebody who can. So just to draw things to a conclusion in this whole area, sorry, it's been quite a longish episode, but this is a big area. You can't simplify sourcing down beyond a certain degree. Define what you are looking for before you go sourcing. That's the critical thing. By all means, go to Alibaba then to find somebody, but refine what it is you actually need the product to do. Try and simplify what it is you're offering and what you're not offering consumers. So what are they willing to give up, right? And then quality control. Absolutely. Always use quality control if you're shipping in from China. That's probably going to be the case, even if you think things shift over because of the relationship between America and China at the moment due to Trump and the tariffs. Okay, you start sourcing in Vietnam. I think it's going to be quite a similar deal in certain ways. I am not an expert in that, but I can't imagine that it's a good idea to source from the other side of the world without sourcing and quality control. And then finally, make sure you detail everything and document it. Everything in a professional business is documented properly. That is one of the absolute characteristics of a well-run business. If, like me, you're not a natural at this, you just need to get over that. And again, working with other people can be a helpful way to, you know, get that dealt with. And we have got the PLP course. If you're wanting to spend some money on a course, can go to amazingfba.com/PLP. At the exact time of recording, mid-August 2019, is not actually publicly available, but we will be making it available pretty soon. So by the time you hear this, it may well be available, but you can at least check it out. That's going to be a pretty low cost compared to a lot of courses out there. We try and make it as thorough as courses out there that cost literally 10 times as much, the $2,000 to $3,000 range. We try and sell the course for a hell of a lot less and make it very, very good value. So that may be a no-brainer for you. If you really have no clue about process and structure to do this thing, you probably should be checking that out. Anyway, that's probably long enough for anyone to listen to a podcast. If you're still here, thank you very much for your perseverance. Perseverance is necessary when you're sourcing, when you're setting up any kind of business, particularly in the phase if you're doing e-commerce selling of sourcing, but you don't have to suffer on your own and you don't have to reinvent the wheel. So I really advise you not to do that. Follow a decent course if you can, if you haven't already bought one, and get some input from other people who've done it first, whoever that may be, and you will move on much faster and with a lot less stress. Thanks so much for listening. Speak to you in the next podcast. Hey there, this is Michael and saying thank you for listening to the Amazing FBA episode you just listened to. Just want to mention that I mentioned at the top of the show our sister podcast, the 10K Collective e-commerce podcast, which is for 6, 7 and 8 figure sellers on Amazon. Specifically, that's who we're geared to. I'm sure that people doing bigger numbers will still have a lot of things to learn from it. And people doing smaller numbers, sure, but it's not going to be immediately actionable for you. So if that is you, keep listening to the Amazing FBA podcast. But if you're 6, 7 or 8 figures on Amazon or e-commerce, I really think you should check it out. So I just want to give you a flavor of what's coming up, or rather just a bit of a list. Not deeply exciting as podcasts go, but I just wanted to, if you're just checking it out, know whether it's for you and what sort of topics we cover. Here's what's coming up. So first of all, an interview with our own Ashley Pierce from the 10K Collective Mastermind, who is talking about his last year in e-commerce, where he went from $750,000 in 2018 in turnover to a run rate this year of $1.25 million. So that's from scratch in 3 years. Super smart man, and he had a lot of the right skills going in. And let's be clear about that. But he didn't have tons of capital, just the conventional amount. So I still think that's an incredible result. And also, he's a really nice guy and a very, very clear-minded and feet-on-the-ground business thinker. So there's so much value. If nothing else, check that out. Really cannot urge you enough. I mean, these guys that have been in the Mastermind for nearly 2 years now have just honed their game to the nth degree. I've never heard quality discussion like I hear in there. And I don't say that because it's about me. It's not about me. I'm just privileged to work with some super smart and great people. So do check it out. Other things coming up then, lots and lots of industry expert interviews. Here's a flavour. And honestly, this is about half the list of people who've agreed to come on for an interview. So several of these are already recorded. So with Ryan Shaffett from Xcube Manufacturing, we are going to be talking about custom manufacturing in China. He's been out there about 18 years. And custom manufacturing, I can't emphasise enough how much that is the future. If you're still just purely private labelling stuff, it's going to get harder and harder to make a profit with that business model. I mean, I think it's got a year or two left in it, but sooner or later you need to get onto custom manufacturing. So this is a hyper-critical skill set that you should be learning, I believe, to future-proof your business. Second is funding, which is another massive topic, how to fund growth, because any scaling business, as Vern Harnish says, growth sucks cash. This is the law of gravity of scaling. Therefore, we've got to look into raising capital, and one way is debt, and Bruce Mack is going to talk to us about that. Aaron O'Sullivan is coming on from Systems Culture Impact to talk about outsourcing and company culture. And again, if you're scaling up a business, you're going to have a very painful time if you keep trying to do it yourself. Even if you've hit, say, $1 million a year equivalent, which I know some people have without a VA, guess what? You're not going to get to 2 million without a VA or basically a proper team on board. So that's something that's definitely a big barrier to entry. And also, to put it on its head, something that will add to your comfort and enjoyment of your business if you go with it. So that's a few things that we got in depth, just in a bit more superficial detail. Chris Shipfling of Providium with Jason Somerville is going to be talking about selling your FBA business, and they have a private equity take on that from the Wall Street side. So really fascinating angle on that. FBA reimbursements with Ben Chambers,
Amazon often owes about $50,000 to $100,000 for any serious seller at some points in the year. How do you get your hands on that? Is it just a fantastic source of cash apart from anything else? So Amazon's got your cash. If you can get it out of the system, guess what? That's fantastically healthy for your business. Ash Munger's talking about quality control from China. He's got an incredibly detailed system for doing that. He's been out in China running IMEX sourcing for 9 years now, so seriously knows his business backwards and sideways and in detail. Connor Gillivan's going to talk about the quick outsourcing system that FreeUp represents and how to outsource quickly and easily. Paulina Masson came on this morning. We talked about pricing, which is a very underrated and very important thing for driving profits. Will Churnland's coming back on, and we're going to talk about evaluating the competition from a real sort of standpoint of somebody who's not just looking at the numbers, although Will is super smart with numbers, but from the point of view of the overall competitive landscape. Really, as ever, Will's a brilliant Amazon thinker, always worth hearing. Kevin King's coming back on, not even sure what we're going to be talking about yet with Kevin, but you know what, he's always a super smart guy when it comes to the marketing side, so I'm sure we have lots to learn from him. What else we got coming up? Amazon account suspension with Joshua Price, launching to overseas markets with John Cant, PPC advertising and profit margins with Mike Zagare of PPC Entourage. What else? Chris Rawlings is coming back from Judo Launch. Presumably we'll be talking about launch. Alex Oxford is coming on to talk about sales tax. He is super smart at explaining this stuff in very simple terms, but yet dealing with all the details as well. Alex is absolutely a critical person to listen to if you sell in the USA. Kostas Anastasiadis is coming back to talk about short-term funding. Brad Moss is coming back, who used to run Seller Central, so he's a super sharp guy as well. China sourcing with Manuel Bekvar. Law for Amazon sellers with Paul Ruffelson. Augustus Kligas is coming back on to talk about various different topics. John Cavendish talk about translations. Paul Harvey to talk about chatbots. Brian Johnson talk about PPC. Greg Mercer to talk about product research. Nadine Eich to talk about Germany and customer service in Germany. And probably going to get my old accountant Penny Lowe back to talk about bookkeeping basics. Whew. We have, as you can tell, an incredible amount of really practical, useful content coming up, a lot of which is already recorded and is definitely coming out over the next few weeks. So get yourself over there, folks. It's just a place you need to be. This is not just a bunch of let's fill the airwaves with the latest kind of hack that's going to die in 2 months. I'm taking care to really focus on content that is as evergreen as possible. Why? Because then you listen once and implement over multiple years or at least months, and then you get the payoff over time, so you get better return on your listening time, if you like. And I think that's a really important metric. Return on listening for me is something I aim to give you in spades. So get yourself over there. 10K Collective is the thing you need to look for. 10K Collective e-commerce podcast, to give it the full title. You can look on iTunes, aka Apple Podcasts apps, or Stitcher. We should be on Spotify any minute now, and we're just waiting to get ourselves on Google Play and Google Podcasts. So it will be more and more available. If you can't find it on your listening device, your preferred device, then just go to the website and you can listen directly there. 10kcollective.com. That's 10k, 10k for kilo. Collective is collective.com. That's 10kcollective.com. Thanks so much for listening to such a very, very lengthy post-roll pitch, if you like. I'm not actually selling anything, so it's not a pitch in any strict sense. It's free and it always will be. Of course, we will mention paid services from time to time, but I believe in giving like 95%, 99% value and a little pitch at the end. So it's not going to be a pitch fest. We are just aiming to build massive goodwill and getting ourselves out there and known. And of course, we hope to attract some wonderful people to our masterminds, and if people can use the services that some of our experts provide, so much the better. But really, that's our main thrust, is to get ourselves out there and build goodwill. So you know more than you're ever going to need to know in life about this podcast. Get yourself over there and listen. Stop listening to Amazing FBA. What are you still doing here? I'm going to go and have a cup of tea. I suggest you go and do the same, and I'll speak to you in the next show.